Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Bill Whalen of the Hoover Institution. He is the host of Policy and Politics, as well as the host of the Three Goodfellas, his colleagues at Hoover. Right now we turn to A California Matter, Bill writing his column for California. The former Attorney General, former San Francisco District Attorney, who is now the Vice President of the United States, nominated by her party to be the President, Kamala Harris. And Bill is looking at Kamala Harris in California, remembering this is a very deep blue state, and therefore positions taken here do not necessarily at first sound national, because they're not meant to be. They're about California, where there's an overwhelming supermajority in the legislature, where the governor comes out of the same offices that many of the most liberal members of the California delegation come, that's the Bay Area, and that Kamala Harris had to check all those boxes on her way through the apparatus. But we go to something that is no longer really controversial nationally. Maybe it is in California. It's a proposition called 47. Prop 47 is about stolen property. Bill, a very good evening to you. What is Prop 47? What was it meant to do from 2014 ballot measure? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. So Proposition 47 was approved by California voters in 2014. So we're talking about a measure that is more than 10 years old now. And the idea, plain and simple, was people spending time in prison for things maybe they shouldn't have, which gets into the issue of overcrowding in California jails. Jerry Brown, then the governor, championed this. And what it did was it said that if you are caught shoplifting with less than $950 in value, probably not going to get charged a felony. It'll just be a misdemeanor. And what this did, John, was that it had this adverse effect of law enforcement just not chasing down perpetrators of theft, because they figured, why bother with this if it's not going to really get prosecuted as a felony? A lot of revolving door justice, the people getting picked up for shoplifting, getting back on the street the same day. And you can draw a corollary between Prop 47 passing and the spectacle that you've seen in cities like San Francisco in the past couple of years, John, where you see shoplifting run amok and just people brazenly walking through a CVS or a Walgreens and just taking stuff on the shelf and walking out. And nobody's stopping them. And this is the culture it's created. So now what you have in California, John, is a rival measure, Proposition 36, which is on the ballot this fall. And it would undo the $950 cap for felonies. It would say if you've been caught doing this three times, it gets elevated to a felony. It also elevates drug offenses for people caught selling the likes of cocaine and meth and heroin and so forth. It's a backlash to this. And the politics is very fascinating, which we'll get into here in a minute, as to how it divides California Democrats. But also the question, John, about if this becomes a national issue as Kamala Harris seeks to become president.
Kamala Harris was Attorney General at the time of the Prop 47 passage. Did she take a position on it, Bill, then or now?
It's interesting, John, in that she did not formally endorse or oppose the measure, even though the governor supported it. She, however, as a state attorney general at the time, John, she was tasked with writing the title and summary of the initiative, what California voters would see on the ballot in their voter information guide. She wrote a very favorable review of the measure, and what she highlighted was it was going to save money, ultimately. She was right in terms of saving money by not keeping people housed in jails and prisons, but what she didn't write about, what didn't, but the money that wasn't saved is a cost to society, John, as companies lose goods, as people, you know, get things ripped off from them and so forth. The cost to society larger than one of incarceration, so there it backed off. But again, what's interesting, John, is going to be if the Trump campaign decides to make this issue of shoplifting of Prop 47 a larger metaphor for Democrats being soft on crime.
Now we go to the time machine. We're going back 40 years to 1984 at the Republican National Convention, where Gene Kirkpatrick, very successful part of the Reagan administration made the term San Francisco Democrat. I remember it, but I don't remember the definition then. The paragraph that pertains of remarks by Ms. Kirkpatrick: when the San Francisco Democrats treat foreign affairs as an afterthought, as they did, they behaved less like a dove or a hawk than like an ostrich. What was she talking about, Bill, and how does it play today, 40 years later?
She was talking about soft democratic foreign policy. This was Ronald Reagan's presidency. This was a Cold Warrior president, and you had Democrats, beginning with Jimmy Carter, who were seen as soft on the Soviets, soft on communist advancements across the country. So that's what she was talking about with San Francisco Democrats. It's very funny, John, in the years after that, people who don't pay attention to the speech thinks that it was a metaphor for homophobia or gay bashing or something like that. It's not. She was focused on foreign policy. Now, what I pointed out in my column was 40 years ago, San Francisco Democrats was a expression for Democratic foreign policy. In 2024, John, if the Trump campaign decides to bring back the phrase San Francisco Democrats, which you've heard in passing now, it really has to do with domestic politics. And it has to do with what? Crime in San Francisco, homelessness, DEI run amok, those sorts of things. In other words, the kind of society that people don't necessarily cotton to. So that is San Francisco Democrats in this day and age.
And San Francisco Democrat, is it still used, Bill, or are we just doing archival work here?
No, it's being thrown around. Newt Gingrich has tossed it around at his media appearances. Trump has used it himself. J.D. Vance, I think, has used it, although curiously enough, J.D. Vance actually lived in the Bay Area as a venture capitalist, and maybe he has to tread lightly on San Francisco. But yeah, it's put out there as a pejorative, and that gets to the issue of how people perceive California these days, John. And you know, for some people, California is a land of milk and honey and abundant sunshine. But for other people, it's hell on earth when you consider homelessness, when you consider crime, when you consider the cost of living, and consider just the constant government mandates just forced down your throat. So that's what I think San Francisco Democrats is getting at in this campaign.
20 years ago, there was a San Francisco police officer who was murdered by gunfire by a man who was subsequently put into prison for life. The issue at the time was the death penalty, which I believe is no longer in California. I believe that the governor has moved against it. But 20 years ago, everybody was in a younger place. And Ms. Harris was the San Francisco district attorney, and Gavin Newsom, now governor, was the San Francisco mayor. How did it come out, Bill?
Well, it came out poorly for Harris in this regard. She decided not to pursue the death penalty in regard to Isaac Espinosa. He was the slain police officer. And she had a valid point, which was that, look, if I try to go for a death penalty conviction, San Francisco jury is not going to go along with that. And so they opted instead for murder second degree, which I believe they got. So the guy got life in prison for that. But two issues came back to haunt Harris here. The first one being a question of values. A cop has been gunned down by a fellow, you know, using an AK-47. Aren't you outraged to the point we want the death penalty for that person? And Harris didn't go in that direction. It was kind of Dukakis-like in that regard, John, just kind of this sort of, you know, just not an emotional response. But the other problem, John, was that it cleaved her with other Democrats at the time. Dianne Feinstein, the late Dianne Feinstein, the senior senator from California, he gave a rather blistering speech at Espinosa's funeral and really kind of, you know, shamed Harris by saying that she believed the death penalty should have been sought. Gavin Newsom at the time, like Harris, in his first year as mayor, she was in her first year as the district attorney. He was, of course, a big death penalty opponent. He would go on to kill it as governor. But he said at the time that, you know, I'm kind of conflicted now. I'm starting to think that maybe this makes sense. So he kind of threw her under the bus, if you will. The main thing, though, she did wrong here was that she held a press conference, John, announcing her decision not to seek the death penalty, but she didn't have the courtesy of contacting Espinosa's widow to give her the heads up that this is what I'm doing. And to this day, Espinosa's widow remains bitter about this. In 2019, she surfaced to talk about it. So the question, John, is, does this come back to Aunt Kamala Harris? You can see law and order becoming a theme for Republicans here. They'll go after Tim Walz's record as governor of Minnesota. But maybe, John, they also go in the Wayback Machine to 20 years and say, this is what Kamala Harris did as district attorney.
Bill Whalen, Hoover Institution. I'm John Batchelor.